This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com and, of course, on the air right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And lately, there's been a lot of talk about Obamacare and mayors doing crack and senators getting arrested with cocaine and all kinds of fun topics that make the District of Columbia and our neighbors to the north the fun places that they are to live. But there are a few things that may have ended up on the back burner that we probably should start thinking about at some point. Yeah, healthcare.gov isn't the greatest, but our budget isn't the greatest either. Where are we with this continuing resolution? And does anyone know that funds have been cut from pretty important programs from the Department of Defense, which takes up the lion's share of the government's budget request, the president's budget request, that is? Yeah. In fact, about 7% of the 2014 budget request for aircraft upgrades has been taken away swiftly. Did anyone know that? I know someone who did. His name is Dr. Kevin Brancato, and he's done an analysis on it. Aircraft upgrades cut 7% in 2014. Funding shift means losers beat winners 2-1, among other developments signaling leaner times ahead. And he's with me now. How are you?
Awesome. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, I'm a little nervous because you consider aircraft upgrades as pretty important. You know, you gotta upgrade your computer. People upgrade their phones. Technology improves. This gives you, it makes life better all the way around. Taking away money to upgrade something like, I don't know, a helicopter or an airplane seems pretty dramatic to me.
Well, I think it's very important for the Department of Defense because, you know, they say, oh, you're buying all these ships and all these weapons, all these brand new stuff, and you're going to put it on the battlefield. When in reality, a lot of the money is used to take all the old equipment we have and upgrade it to current spec.
Right.
Sometimes that's more cost effective, sometimes it's less cost effective. But this is what they do. They have a huge fleet of helicopters, drones, fighter aircraft, cargo aircraft, and they have a lot of different missions. They want these aircraft to be able to perform. And technology is advancing at an incredible pace. So they would like to be able to integrate any of these new technologies in radar and communications. Or, you know, just to change the structure of the aircraft to make it last longer. And these are the sorts of things that, after a war, you know, some are more important than others, but they need to be able to get done. And what we found by looking at this budget last year, this aircraft modifications budget, and then back this year, was that, very interestingly, they had this production plan last year, and it, you know, goes up and down, and then right at the end, the last of their five-year plan, it goes up. And we look at the same plan this year, and it looks like they just pushed everything to the right. But the overall pattern was pushed to the right. It is remarkable. I had never seen this before in any place. We talk about this.
Right.
Where, you know, when the Defense Department needs money for other priorities, they take it.
Sure.
And they put money at the end of the five-year plan. But I've never visually seen it the way I did this year, where we know there are huge budget pressures. And this is before sequestration, before any big budget cuts. This is just a general level where they pushed a lot of these mods to the right in the aggregate. Individual mods, some go up, some go down. But you see this whole pattern. I was just shocked. And everyone I showed this to went, wow, we thought this happened, but we've never
heard
seen
of
it.
This mythical shift.
But yeah, we've never seen it happen. And so that's been very interesting.
You know, I'm looking at the, and I showed this to you a moment ago. I have the program acquisition cost by weapons system, the budget request for 2014. And you can see this shift. I mean, I'm just looking at it line item by line item. And for the most part, money's gone. It's just gone.
Well, there are lots of programs. Look, the war in Iraq has been gone. It's done a long time ago now. Afghanistan is ramping down. And the priorities for the Defense Department are, as they say, shifting to the Pacific. Well, what does that entail?
Right.
It doesn't entail buying lots of new stuff, specific weapon systems. It entails ensuring that what we have now is applicable to those missions. So it will be for ships, buying the right sorts of stuff to equip those ships. For soldiers, making sure they have the right stuff. For bases, it doesn't entail developing a brand new weapon system platform. It doesn't entail making sure that we have every single aircraft that we wanted before. The Air Force, in response to a lot of the budget pressures, has said, we have three major priorities. We want to make sure we protect the F-35s, the fighter jets that we're going to buy. We're going to protect this new long-range bomber we want to build. And the aerial refueling tanker that we're buying from Boeing under a fixed-price contract. We really want to protect that. Everything else, though, is up in the air. And by everything else, they mean a lot of these aircraft modifications.
Right.
It's very interesting that their priorities are leaning towards cutting a lot of these programs, even though they are important.
Sure.
And so there's this tension here that we see. And last year, at the middle of the year, after this, all these budget cuts, the department had to reprogram money to put more money into operations and maintenance and take away from acquisition programs. And you know where they tried taking it away from? Aircraft modifications. Lots and lots of aircraft modifications.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, Congress didn't let them. Congress came back and said, oh, you wanted to reprogram $4.4 billion in all these acquisitions. No, you can't do all that. And they rescinded a huge share. A lot of the aircraft modification programs, Congress said, not Congress, just the defense committees, the House Appropriations, Senate Appropriations, House Armed Services, Senate Armed Services, they all have veto power over when the Defense Department wants to move large amounts of money. And they said, no, aircraft modifications are important, and you can't move money out of those accounts. You're going to modify those aircraft.
Aircraft modifications are extremely important. And as I take a look at the budget here, I'm looking at the Black Hawk helicopter specifically. They're talking about $1.2 billion for fiscal year 2014 to make those modifications. I actually have the U.S. Army Air Force Black Hawk modernization deck that walks through the systems that are going to be modernization through technology insertion, migrating, selecting technologies from the UHM-60, upgrading, obsolescence changes. There's a lot of stuff that's just obsolete on these helicopters. And there's literally schematics in here that show you exactly what's going to be upgraded, how they're going to do it. $1.2 billion worth.
Well, I mean, a lot of these systems are almost like flying trucks.
Right.
Right? And so whether they're cargo aircraft, fighter aircraft, helicopters, it's the sensors, it's the weapons packages, it's everything else that on these that drive the cost of these systems, and that need to be shifted around.
One of the things that I found interesting in here is the forward-looking infrared radar, the FLIR device that's on a lot of these. They say that they have a new one that's cheaper and more cost-effective to actually run on the chopper. Money has been cut, about the $100 million, it looks like, has been taken away from the budget, and it scares me because this is technology now that needs to be brought into we need to be modernized. Secretary Hagel actually spoke to some Pentagon reporters recently and said that as a result of the full sweeping budget cuts over the next 10 years, this will leave the nation with an ill-prepared, under-equipped military doomed to face more technologically advanced enemies. We're the protectors of all.
I'm going to push back on that.
Okay, and that's
the U.S. U.S. military is the dominant military force.
Sure,
we do not have a monopoly. That is, I'm
no, we certainly we don't have a monopoly. We have allies that we work with, and we feed those allies just as they feed us.
The U.S. share of the global economy is tremendous, but the U.S. share of global GDP, the amount that's produced, is going to decline because other nations are going to grow. They will have money to fund their militaries for research and development, for procurement, to modernize, sustain modern militaries. The U.S. is not going to be alone. It can maintain its technological edge by investing as much as prudently and wisely. And that is the course that everyone, I think Secretary Hagel, everyone else in the Defense Department has basically said, there are specific areas we need to maintain technological dominance, invest, and that's going to happen for the foreseeable future.
But
it's a choice. It's a choice they have to make. And that's what this review that Secretary Hagel called in when he came into office, and the skimmer. And it's going to be released. The details, fundamental details, will be released at the same time the president's fiscal 15 budget request, February, March, around that time.
Sure.
But he's already left out this outline and already basically said that the sort of decision he wants to make is you can choose between a large force, large numbers of planes, large numbers of soldiers, or you can choose one which is smaller, but maintains investments in technological dominance. And the way he framed it then, and the way everyone has framed it since, leads to believe that technological dominance is the winner. The U.S. is going to invest lots of money in new equipment, new technology. And that's why I said when there were budget cuts,
right,
it's not clear what happens to aircraft modifications. Because, yeah, you have fewer planes, but you want them technologically dominant. So what's the overall market look like?
Right.
Maybe you're going to buy, you're going to keep those priorities for the Air Force and the Navy and the Army. But does that mean you're going to buy more new systems with all the bells and whistles on them? Or are you going to keep, since a lot of them are trucks, you know, the basic airframes, the basic engines, keep those, but invest more in the systems than the ones that you have.
Sure.
So what this looks like is an investment in a new technological dominance, right? That's maintaining this. That's not clear. And I don't think anybody really understands that. We're going to get some sense when the president releases the fiscal 15 budget request, because you're going to have a budget that tries, at least in spirit, if not completely total in the law, to meet the spirit of, to meet the law, which is $55 billion a year less than the president's previous request.
Right.
That's a huge decrease, but one that makes wise decisions. And so all these aircraft modifications that listed here, you know, the programs, the largest ones are the F-18, F-35, F-15. These are fighter jets.
Right.
You know, and the idea is that you want to upgrade their capabilities. Now, the F-35, of course, is a very interesting thing you want to upgrade. It's brand new. It's rolling off the line. So why are they upgrading it? Well, for one thing, they had problems with software that just not developed on time.
I was just about to say,
but they're
going to
have the jets roll off the line.
Yeah.
And then bring them back in to bring them up to current spec.
Goodyear made some new tires. We want to get those on there.
That's when they do a what's called a SLEP, a service life extension, they will change the landing gear, particularly for aircraft that are Navy based, like the F-18s are going to land on a carrier.
Right.
One of the key constraints is not just the flying hours for each of the, but how many times they can land, because landing is brutal on an aircraft. And so replacing the landing gear is part of that. So, yeah, you could make fun that there's a new tire out
but
there.
It's actually
but
true.
That's true. And then there are a bunch of other ones which are very interesting. The F-22 Raptor. You know, F-22 is the dominant fifth-generation fighter. The Air Force only bought so many of them, 187 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to keep upgrading their capabilities. And this is the, I think, increment 3.2, one of the latest increments, which has a whole host of upgrades. Underneath them. And that's what each of these are. In this report that I wrote, we're at a pretty high level of understanding these. You drill down to those documents I saw you pull up before on your and you started grilling me about this modification and this year and whatnot. That gets very complicated.
Yeah.
And a previous report we had written started to drill down into that and found a lot of contractors are trying to approach this business of saying, where is this technological dominance going to come into the future? Where can we help the military upgrade its capabilities? And so part of this report, which was looking at this bump in the out years. So, you know, okay, there's funding in fiscal 14. We're in fiscal 14 now. There's funding. Budgets may be cut. But what are the long-term priorities? What I've done in the last report and this one is saying, hey, wait a minute. There's a bump at the end of this five-year plan. What's that? What goes beyond that five-year plan? What can they can call in? It's very similar in some ways. You know, the type of upgrades fall into several different categories, but it's the same stuff. It's all obviously legacy equipment.
Sure.
F-16s. You know, the U.S. arguably does not have the world's most sophisticated F-16s anymore. I think UAE is ordering the most ones because it doesn't need to have this. It has other equipment that's doing that. But it wants to upgrade F-16s, CH-47 Chinooks. E-2 Hawkeyes, which are another carrier-based aircraft. So you've got these very specific upgrade plans that are very long range. I think those are very good bets. Those don't really get changed. Those are not the sorts of aircraft that you want to pull back on. I think the Air Force might have a pretty interesting decision on its hands. We want F-35s and lots of them. F-35 has the same role as the F-16, and it costs more to operate.
Sure.
So if you're in a budget constraint, maybe you want a high-low mix.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I was actually going to mention the Air Force. By the way, you're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, where my guest is Dr. Kevin Brancato, whose latest analysis, aircraft upgrades cut 7% in 2014. Funding shift means losers beat winners 2-1, among other developments, signaling leaner times ahead. I want to get into the people who are the winners and losers here as we take a look down the road who are going to be the ones that are going to be. And I realize it's the same group.
No, it's not just the same group. It's the same company.
It's the same company.
It's Lockheed Martin.
Okay.
So Lockheed Martin is the biggest loser and the biggest winner because it has investments in lots of different places. And so the F-35 program, at least in this budget analysis, they had to put a lot more money in to upgrade the aircraft that are rolling off the line. But at the same time, some of the older modifications to the C-5 cargo jets, they are ending. And so in terms of funding, the largest program with the largest gains and the program with the largest losers is managed by Lockheed Martin. That's not unusual. So what you find, though, is that there are lots of large companies, and it's constantly churning. But I think what people who want to read this sort of report are the smaller companies, the ones that are providing the hardware, providing the software, that they're ones that are usually providing parts. And they don't have an in. They don't understand. They don't know exactly where to put their plans. And so you're the companies that have small prime contracts with the government, but lots of subcontracts. These are the ones that want the market intelligence. Then the prime contractors will know because they're talking all the time and they'll have a better sense. It's the subcontractors that really don't. They're not small businesses, mom and pop shops. These are companies like Eaton, Moog. These are big companies.
Sure.
But they're not prime contractors on these aircraft modifications. What we found out last time is that the nature of the contracts between the private sector and the government is that the government has this really hard time managing all this because you've got a prime contractor, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, that knows, has built these things, knows all about them, is going to manage the supply chains, the logistics, the repair shops. The government just simply can't bring everything in and do everything organically. It's going to have these companies do it. And so I found this great example last time for F-18s where the government put in its government database for procurements and basically said, Boeing is looking for suppliers too. And this is on a government website. But because the nature of the relationship is that the government pays Boeing for availability of the aircraft.
Right.
So, yeah, it's basically saying, Navy saying to Boeing, we'll pay you more if we need to have a greater availability of the aircraft. We'll pay you less if we need less.
Right.
And it's really a joint program between these companies. This is, you know, people say, oh, it's contracting and the contractors are out to get as much as they can. It's a very complex relationship between the government and these contractors. And we see it everywhere. I mean, there's winners and losers. Well, everyone in the industry broadly will go down. Everyone in the industry, and I think that's unavoidable. There will be some specific winners, but I think the churn is really hard to predict.
You mentioned the Air Force wanting to pick up some F-35s. Obviously, there's going to have to be some concessions somewhere, given the budget constraints, and keeping their original procurement initiatives on track. In thinking about that, looking down the road, they're talking about scrapping the fleet of KC-10 tankers.
Yes, KC-10s, A-10s as well.
A-10s as well. Now, that gets them a couple of things. You get rid of the planes, but then you also get rid of all the support for those planes as well. So you save a ton of money. Would the support, I mean, would it balance itself out? Are we looking at
different skill sets? Well, no, these are large and complex cost analyses. You do cost-benefit analyses, trade-offs.
Right.
What's interesting when you look at those budgets, you looked at the budgets before and said, oh, the money's going up, money's going down. When they're making acquisition decisions, it's really hard to say, okay, here's how much this is going to cost us overall for the life of the program, making decision A, you know, build as many F-35s as we want, or decision B, mix F-35s or fewer of them and then use some F-16s and other aircraft. To do the cost analysis is actually a hugely expensive process because I've done those sorts of things myself and highly uncertain. We do not know how much the F-35 is going to cost to operate.
Good point.
We don't know.
Good point.
So the idea, well, I mean, you have a good sense from operating it now somewhat, but 5 years ago, you had no idea in reality what that would cost. It's a new type of aircraft, lots of new systems. You'd have a good guess using historical extrapolations. And so you saw lots of fluctuation over time. So when they say, okay, well, we're going to get rid of these other fleets of aircraft, which, of course, is congressional opposition to. Nobody wants to have a fleet of aircraft in their district go away because it means a huge number of jobs and economic viability in the district goes away. So no congressperson wants this.
Yeah. I had read recently that the A-10s may not may not sit on the shelf for long. The Army wants to pick them up. Is that something that they can trade for? I mean, we swap in players now. We're on the free agent market. I'll take your A-10s for...
fixed-wing aviation is not something the Army does. So this
maybe
is
it was the National Guard. It may have
well,
been the
it's
National,
even that. It's a fixed-wing aviation asset. This is something the Air Force has done.
Okay.
The Army, you know, when you had a creation of the Air Force, you had to decide the roles and missions. Yet the A-10, of course, for those who don't know, it's a close support
aircraft. Combat.
So the point is not that you're going to fly all the way very up high and bomb and never see.
Right.
This is for soldiers on the ground. It's supporting them in firefights.
Right.
Now, that is a mission that the Army says that they would want. The Air Force has never particularly liked it. But I think the idea is, the Army is going to have to cut dramatically the number of soldiers. Where is it going to get the money to pick up the A-10?
Right.
You know, the Air Force appears willing to be cut a lot of airmen to maintain its fleet of F-35s.
Right.
This is a very difficult thing to understand when they've already stood down lots of fighter wings and say they're not training them, and they have a hollow force. Because they're right now in the middle of making these decisions. And so what they have done in the short term is to... shut off the training spigot, leave their personnel in place. The president has exempted personnel from sequestration, last year exempted it, says he will exempt them this year. This final decision doesn't happen until he has to make the order. So you've got all the people, but you're cutting money from acquisition, cutting money from training. And that is how the force gets hollow, by having all these people and no money to train them.
Right.
The alternate vision of the technologically dominant force is one where, yes, you have far fewer people, but you have all the systems, the new systems that are high technology, and then all these aircraft modifications on the other and on the existing platforms. You don't have a hollow force. You have an elite, smaller force. And you have to pay the money for the upgrades, pay the money for the training, but have fewer personnel. But that is really hard for Congress to accept.
Sure.
Because that means that, you know, base closure is very difficult to get through. They have a special process called BRAC, where it's they basically set up a commission. The commission decides something. It's an all or nothing vote. That's it. It's an all or nothing vote. You can't just pick and choose what you want to close. That's why they don't even want another set of BRAC, because they don't even go into there.
Right.
But that will be the end result.
The latest BRAC did help my property values, I must admit.
Huh. I'm sure it did mine as well. My house wouldn't exist if
there
it didn't.
You go. Yeah. There you go. So what's next as we go down this rabbit hole? Obviously, we're in the middle of a continuing resolution.
Continuing resolution basically is Congress saying, you're going to get the money now that you got last year.
Right.
That's what it is, because we don't know anything else.
So they're going to continue funding at last year's levels.
Yes.
I get it.
But your Department of Defense and other agencies, you can't start any new programs.
Okay.
Right? And then you can't buy more of anything you did last year. So, because you can't transfer money around.
Can you fix the stuff that you currently have?
Oh, yeah.
Like the literal combat ship. They're looking at not being able to communicate with each other right now. The communication system's busted.
I'm not sure if it's busted or it really does not. It doesn't meet certain specifications.
Two cans and a string might work a little bit better at this point.
Hey, come on.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, you bought stock in Campbell's soup, didn't you?
I don't know what you're saying.
That's okay. I got it. I see. Everyone would be buying cans now. With the LCS... is a favorite target of budget cutters,
right,
of people who look for waste, fraud, and abuse.
Yeah.
It's a new ship class, and you're going to be huge problems with new ships and new ship classes.
Sure.
Always.
It's always enlightening when Dr. Kevin Brancato is here. His latest analysis is called Aircraft Upgrades Cut 7% in 2014. Look forward on BGov now. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Always happy to derail your conversation.
Thanks again. And with that, we put the wraps on this week's edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at BGov. Follow me on Twitter at Alan L. Scott. I'll catch you again next Thursday with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.